All right, so the baskets are almost done. Just enough time to tell you. One more brief story. An atheist was walking through the woods, admiring all the accident of evolution had created. What majestic trees, what powerful rivers, what beautiful animals. As he was walking alongside the river, he heard a rustling in the bushes behind him and turned to look. There was a 7-foot grizzly. The grizzly was running, and so was the man. He looked over his shoulder and saw that the bear was closing in on him. He looked over his shoulder again, and the bear was even closer. His heart was pumping frantically, and he tried to run even faster, and he fell. He tripped. He rolled over to pick himself up, but saw the bear right on top of him, reaching for him with his left paw and raising his right paw to strike. At that instant, the atheist cried out, "Oh, my God!" Time stopped. The bear froze. The forest was silent. As a bright light shone upon the man, a voice came out of the sky. "You deny my existence for all these years? Teach others I don't exist? And even credit creation to a cosmic accident? Do you expect me to help you out of this predicament? Am I to count on you as a believer?" The atheist looked directly into the light. "It would be hypocritical of me to suddenly ask you to create me as a Christian now, but perhaps could you make the bear a Christian?" "Very well," said the voice. The light went out, and the sounds of the forest resumed. And then the bear dropped his right paw, dropped his left paw, sat down, and bowed his head, and said, "Lord, for this food I'm about to receive." I am truly thankful. Oh my, can you tell I had a tough week? Ha. Huh. So, friends, I set myself up, as did all the other ministers in Westchester County, Unitarian Universalists, to talk about grace today. So all my colleagues in Westchester County are talking about grace. So I've known for weeks, and I've been thinking about it and reading and pondering it. And don't you know, the week I was to write, I was just having a tough week. You know, we all have those tough weeks. Things don't work out. You're muddling in your mind more than you have clarity. Things don't go the way you had hoped they would. So what I did was just keep working on it, keep acting as if something would happen. And I didn't realize till yesterday that a part of the grace of my week was that I spent a day with a friend, my old friend Elvira, whom some of you have met. And Elvira has been here a couple of times, and she has lived with 10 times the tragedy in her life that I have ever known. Or perhaps we'll ever know. And she lives with a tremendous amount of grace. She works at it really hard. It is not an easy thing. But she is one of my mentors around living with grace. So as we were riding in the car together, as always, as is her joy, she popped in a CD and looked warily at me over her glasses, which is essentially permission for me to say, "A little too much for me." And they were all of her favorite hymns and spirituals about Jesus and God and walking together. And honestly, I hummed along and I sang out loud. And this line has been with me again and again and again this week. And I wasn't really paying attention to it. But the line that stuck with me, "A saint is but a sinner who's fallen down, but then got up." Saint is just a sinner who fell down and got up. So I have had the beauty and joy and the opportunity in my life to know many people of different cultures deeply. And I've learned to accept as different ways of naming something that's familiar to me, not the same, but to just honor a deep experience. And so being able, if I don't, because I do not understand myself to be a Christian in the current understanding of Christianity, I don't identify easily with some of the hymns, but if I'm present to the spirit of love and grace and welcome, and there are many other words that fit in there well for people, then it's really possible for me to get to inspiration and truth. So we've learned, all of us live with large doses of grace as far as certainly our experience of the sun and the moon and the sky and the earth, trees, love. So one of the experiences that's hard for me to talk about when I'm not feeling it is the kind of grace where you feel like, I apologize to those of you who don't swim or are not comfortable with this. I wasn't comfortable with this until last summer when I learned at the age of 60 how to float. But the experience of being able to lie back in the water and have someone hold your head and your body stays on top and you just rest, totally held. For me, allowing that to happen is an experience of grace. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about when I talk about grace. It's an unearned, uncontrolled, unexpected experience of mystery, as Dorothy put it, of help when you least expect it, of love arriving when you don't feel worthy of it. So many, many of the religious traditions have countless rituals and exercises that are done in order to keep ourselves open to grace. Like singing Haida Haida was one of the exercises of opening, opening, opening. What a joyful way to open, right? I believe, and have experienced that grace is available. It's like wind, or it's like breath coming into us. Grace is available if I'm open to it, as an individual and as a household and as a group. Grace is like wind or like breath. But it's really awkward to intentionally invite grace, for instance, through prayer, if is what a tendency among Unitarian Universalists is like a prayer of, dear God, if there is a God, please help my soul if I have a soul. You know, it's really harder to have that personal, open, receptive place for grace. So how do we work or play on a regular basis to open ourselves to grace? And we've talked about this in a variety of ways. It's kind of like co-conspiring with grace. It's easy to figure out how to co-conspire with luck. You know, you buy a lottery ticket. That's luck. But to co-conspire, to be a co-conspirator with grace, takes something more intentional, more gracious, more willing to offer grace to someone else. So grace is the darndest thing. It's been something that I've been thinking a lot about, have thought a lot about, but if I'm not feeling it, it's really hard to practice it and be open to it. You know, I meditate to to try to still this monkey mind that I have. My mind is like a monkey. It moves all over the place all the time. And to meditate is to keep trying and practicing to bring it to a more still point. Sometimes that helps, because then I can recognize something else when it arrives, like grace. Sometimes I will pray in order to just open my heart, just to be grateful, just to move myself from a stuck place, sometimes pleading to get unstuck or to figure something out. And I have read inspirational and brilliant words of other people. I know you have too, but grace does not arrive on demand. It does not and will not be controlled. It cannot be conjured or cajoled. So it wasn't until this morning at 5 a.m. that I looked out my window and gave up, because I had not created something to say to you that felt worthy. So at 5 a.m., I looked out the window and I plunked my head against the cold glass and just, at that moment, remembered a couple of images from my friend Elvira of people dancing in order to be open. People dancing in order to be together and to create this spirit of openness and possibility. And I wished for that. But what popped into my head was, oh, one way that Unitarian Universalists really do open to grace is when we build relationship with each other and when we laugh together, when we eat together. Thus came the jokes, which, by the way, you can find online if you Google Unitarian Universalist jokes. Turns out there are lots of them, some of them by Garrison Keillor. Yeah. So here we are, and my gamble is that through my stories and through invitation, that you are the ones who are going to be able to tell more stories of grace than I have in my back pocket. Whatever you call it, you'll have stories of being unaccountably affronted somehow, confronted, apprehended by nature, or receiving unexpected help, an open window where it was closed a few minutes ago, being filled by love, family, by laughter, and inspiration. So I asked Paul Lansdale, who's really working hard not to cough over here. Paul is an artist. Yeah. Paul is an artist who accepted my invitation to think with me about how the art that he has done and continues to do is somehow connected to the idea of grace or the experience of grace. And you may not be able to see this piece up here, but I invite you to come through at some point and take a look. But what you'll see is, from what I understand from Paul, is that it's, for him, a pleasing expression of the creative spirit within him. And here's what he had to say about it. I find that the act of making a collage parallels the very life experience. You make do with what comes to you. And if you succeed in making a pleasing visual experience, that's the grace or the reward that comes from the effort of channeling the creative spirit that indwells you. He's a poet as well as an artist. So sharing this part of his life as an artist, Paul also spoke of one of his mentors, Julian Janczak. Janczak, a central mentor in Paul's life as an artist. Paul told me the story that this professor was a survivor of the Holocaust, and that while he was imprisoned there, that he was tormented, and it was known that he was a famous artist, and that part of the torment was to cut the muscles in his arm that he needed in order to do his art. Thus, he was permanently maimed. And he moved on after this experience to change his art form and lifting him into a new place, a different place. He has become one of the foremost and best known op artists in the United States, and optical art. And so no matter what, this story struck me as, I mean, it was a gift to hear the story, and it was inspiring for me. And I understand that whatever way you think of grace, that perhaps grace entered into this man's life to help him reshape his purpose. But no matter how you believe or think about or deny that grace exists, however help or love happens when we least expect it, whether or not you have a name for it, it does happen. We do experience it. So what if we allow the possibility that there are dynamics in life that are beyond our understanding, that are mysterious, dynamics like energy or love or a gift, name it whatever you will, spirit, gifts that can and do change what is happening in ways we couldn't have anticipated and for which we have cause to be grateful. For us as individuals, also as households, and also as groups. Scott Alexander is a famous Unitarian Universalist minister who wrote this. Grace has healed us as a faith community. Whether our personal beliefs, all of us find common ground around celebrating the gifts that we didn't expect, create, or deserve. Whereas once we did fight about who is the giver of grace and whether or not there even is grace or a giver of grace, we're now much more comfortable and even satisfied coming together to celebrate the gift. And not just celebrating it, but giving it a little bit of help as well. This is also what it means to us to be a people of grace, he says. Grace operates often maddeningly by its own set of rules. Independent, inscrutable, also seems that grace enjoys pulling us in its partner in crime. While we can't control it, we can collude with, we can co-conspire, co-create. And so, not only do we ask to be open to grace, but we actually are asked to occasionally give up our plans, our precious ideas about what's supposed to happen, and participate in grace, to be givers of grace. So, here we go. Grace, as I was saying, that I've learned from traditions all around the world, the practices that help people be open to the source, however they name the source of life, so that their lives are graced. And here's a little story. Dana Warsnop, she calls it her elevator story. She was an intern minister when she wrote this story up in Toronto. There was a huge international interfaith gathering, and five delegates found themselves together waiting for an incredibly slow elevator. And so to break the monotony, one of the delegates suggested that they play a game and see if they can explain their faith in the time it took for the elevator to go from where they were on the first floor to wherever they needed to go. And they were up and they were going down. So if they could explain their faith by the time they got down to the bottom floor, the first floor, then they had, they won. And so it meant they'd have to travel up and down together in order for everybody to give it a try, but they worked at it. So on the trip down from the 10th floor, the Roman Catholic delegate volunteered to go first. He recited the Apostles' Creed, and he finished just as the doors opened to the lobby on that first floor. So they went back up again, and the Universalist pushed the button on the 10th floor and proceeded to say, Universalists, who were one side of the stream, one of the two streams that came together to create our tradition, we Universalists believe in the essential goodness of humanity and of God. We believe that God loves all creatures and intends our well-being and happiness in this world and the next. We believe in a God who rewards and does not punish. The Universalist was finished well before the elevator reached the 10th floor. Next, it was the Hindu delegate's turn, and pressing the button for the lobby to go back down, she said, "We Hindus believe in the great wheel of life. All is a cycle, and what has been will be again. It is for us to understand our place in this turning, to do what falls to us to do, and to celebrate our place in the scheme of existence." And like the Universalist, she was done before the elevator reached its destination. Then the Zen Buddhist pushed the button to go to the 10th floor. Everybody waited eagerly to hear what he was going to say, but there was only silence. When the door opened, they asked the Zen Buddhist, "Why did you not say anything to us about your belief?" And he replied, "In saying nothing, I said all there was to say." The interfaith conference delegates scratched their heads and looked to the Unitarian, the last to take a turn. The elevator doors closed. She reached out to push the button, but before she got to the first floor where they were all headed, she hit the button for the second floor. And they all said, "Why are you pushing this button and not going all the way down?" And she said, "Because there's this great coffee shop on this floor, and we should all get together, kick back, and really get to know each other and talk about it." So if our inclination is to talk a lot, to hear a lot, to build our relationships, we should use that gift, right? Open ourselves up. Grace is not an intellectual process, actually. It's deepening relationship that can be exercising an opening to grace, to something that we didn't expect to happen. So what if we had practices that really opened our hearts on a regular basis? What would it look like? At Dancing Rock, at Standing Rock when I was there, the practice was Native American dancing almost around the clock at the sacred fire. Dancing was the act of grace, the act of keeping open to grace. It was the constant prayer. It was of many different nations, many, many different nations. And Toni Morrison's story, Beloved, I don't know if you've read it, but there's a passage in there where Baby Suggs is the convener of a gathering in the woods of her community of people who were enslaved. And she sat in the center with everybody hiding out in the woods or standing behind trees. And then she called forth the men and said, "Dance, dance for the women and children." And so the men danced. And then she called the women out and said, "Dance, dance for the women and children." And the children came out and they danced too. And she said to them that the only grace they could have was the grace they could imagine, that if they couldn't see it, they wouldn't be able to receive it. "Here," she said, "in this place, here, we are flesh, flesh that weeps and laughs, flesh that dances our bare feet in the grass. Love it. Love it hard." So there are many, many stories of ways that people open themselves to prayer, grace, saying grace, three times a day or however many times you eat. It's a way to automatically sit down, open our hearts to being grateful. You know, a lot of us have a hard time teaching children grace because we don't want to indoctrinate the children to believe a particular thing. But frankly, Anne Lamott, in her book, Amazing Grace, I think is what it's called, writes about the fact that if you don't teach children how to maintain a sense of what's important in their lives, the world is really willing to do that. I mean, gosh, right? So creating the pattern of being open to being grateful is what we're looking for. Being open to the pattern of openness. And so I am going to stop because I would really love for us to have the time to talk about grace, what it means and doesn't mean to each of us.